Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Alaska Collaborative on Health and the Environment teleconference on International Actions to Protect Health and Environment, a report from the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants. My name is Diana DeFazio, and on behalf of Alaska Community Action on Toxics, I'll be facilitating today's call. CHE Alaska is a regional partnership group of the National Collaborative on Health and the Environment. CHE Alaska aims to advance knowledge and effective action to address growing concerns about the links between human health and environmental factors. We've held nearly 100 of these teleconferences, and they're all available on our website at akaction.org. You can download the recordings for any call that you've missed. You can find more information at akaction.org and healthandenvironment.org. Last night, I sent an email with a link to today's presentation slides to everyone who signed up for the call. You can also go to akaction.org and click on the announcement for today's call to access the presentation. Both of our presenters will be working off the same set of slides, so you only have one document to download. It's a PDF, and our presenters will refer to the page number every so often to help you follow along. The call will last 1 hour, with time at the end for your questions and for discussion. Today, Pam Miller and Vi Wahihi of Alaska Community Action on Toxics will be presenting about the 7th Conference of Parties to the Stockholm Convention, which they attended earlier this month. The Stockholm Convention is a global treaty to eliminate the world's most dangerous chemicals. Parties to the convention meet every 2 years to decide which additional chemicals should be added to the global ban. Pam will tell you more about the convention, the chemicals that were up for consideration at this year's meeting, and why these chemicals are of particular concern to Arctic fish, wildlife, and people. And Vi will be discussing the human rights case for banning persistent organic pollutants and how an Indigenous delegation to the Stockholm Convention Conference of Parties contributed to the victory in Geneva earlier this month. I'd like to go ahead and introduce both of our speakers now. Pam Miller is Executive Director of Alaska Community Action on Toxics, a non-governmental environmental health and justice organization founded in 1997. Her work has contributed to a number of decisions to eliminate the use of pesticides. She was instrumental in prompting the 2006 decision by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to withdraw agricultural products containing lindane from the U.S. The 2010 decision by the same agency to phase out uses of endosulfan, and the 2011 and 2013 decisions to ban endosulfan and hexabromocyclododecane worldwide under the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants. In 2012, she was elected to the steering committee for the International POPs Elimination Network in recognition of her work on the Stockholm Convention. Pam is known for her work to prompt state, national, and international chemicals policy reform to protect environmental and human health in the Arctic. And our second speaker is Vi Wahihi. She is a bilingual Yupik who was born in Savoonga on St. Lawrence Island and grew up in both Savoonga and Nome. Vi has been with Alaska Community Action on Toxics since 2002, and she currently serves as ACAT's Environmental Health and Justice Program Director. In 2010, she was awarded the Environmental Achievement Award in recognition of valuable contributions to environmental excellence in Alaska by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. And in 2012, leaders of Savoonga presented Vi with a certificate of appreciation for the dedication and devoted service as an ambassador of St. Lawrence Island for protecting our health and human rights. She serves as a National Advisory Environmental Health Sciences Council member to the National Institute of Health. Vi has regularly attended the Stockholm Convention Conference of Parties, where she helps to bring to light the disproportionate impacts of contamination from persistent organic pollutants on Arctic Indigenous peoples. Welcome, Pam, and welcome, Vi. You may go ahead and begin.
Good morning, Diana. Thank you very much. This is Pam, and I'll be starting the presentation this morning, and then Vi will be talking about the significant contribution of the Global Indigenous Caucus. And good morning, everyone. Pam Miller with Alaska Community Action on Toxics. And Vi and I just returned from the triple conference of parties of the Stockholm Convention, the Basel Convention, and the Rotterdam Convention. These meetings were held in Geneva from May 4th through the 16th. So we're just returning, and we'll be mostly focusing on the Stockholm Convention and reporting back about some of the significant decisions that were made at the Stockholm decision convention, but I'll also be talking a little bit about the two other conventions. And in addition to Vi and I, Erica Apatiki and Tiffany Immingen, who are our two community health researchers from St. Lawrence Island, also participated. And I'd like to also acknowledge Rochelle Diver with the International Indian Treaty Council. She was not able to present on the conference call this morning. She may be joining us during the call, but she was also a very significant contributor to the meetings in Geneva. And the Indigenous participants, and Vi will talk more about this, were part of a global Indigenous caucus that represented First Nations and tribes from Alaska, Canada, the lower 48, the South Pacific, and also the Arctic. So the first, we'll go to the next slide that just introduces a little bit about Alaska Community Action on Toxics. And I won't read all of this, but these values in our mission statement really guide our work each day. And these core values were established by our board and staff. So we'll go to the next slide. This slide is the slide that looks at the globe from an Arctic perspective, because one of the reasons that our small environmental health and justice organization, Alaska Community Action on Toxics, is involved in international work is because chemicals don't respect political boundaries, and they can be transported hundreds and even thousands of miles from lower latitudes on wind and ocean currents into the Arctic, where they tend to accumulate in the bodies of fish and wildlife. So we've realized that while it's very important to work at a local level, for instance, to get pesticides out of the school district and to work on state policies and to address military and industrial contamination here in Alaska, we really also need to work at the international level, again, because it takes global agreements to phase out chemicals that are harming the Arctic right now. And we'll go to the next slide, please. This just presents a short overview of the three chemical conventions that just met, chemical and waste conventions that just met in Geneva in the past couple of weeks. The Basel Convention really addresses the transboundary movement of hazardous waste. And we know that over 400 metric tons per year are transported in a transboundary way from country to country. And the Basel Convention was really designed to reduce this transboundary movement of hazardous waste, to make sure that this waste is disposed of in an environmentally sound manner as close to the source as possible, so that developed countries, for instance, are not dumping hazardous waste in developing countries. The Rotterdam Convention is a legally binding obligation for prior informed consent, and basically this facilitates information exchange between nations about chemicals and provides right-to-know information so that national decisions can be made about the import and export of chemicals. And today, on today's call, we'll be talking most about the Stockholm Convention, which is a legally binding international agreement on persistent organic pollutants. These are chemicals that tend to bioaccumulate, again, in the bodies of wildlife and people. They are persistent, meaning they last a long time in the environment. Organic simply means that they have a hydrocarbon base. This treaty is an internationally and legally binding convention that was first entered into force in 2004. We now have 179 parties or nations that have agreed to the provisions of the convention and have ratified it in their own countries. And I should mention that the U.S. has not yet ratified this convention. It takes a majority vote by the U.S. Senate. So that has not yet been done. But the importance of the treaty is that the treaty initially addressed 12 of the so-called Dirty Dozen chemicals. These are some of the more infamous chemicals, such as DDT, a number of other pesticides, PCBs, dioxins, and furans. But the real strength of this treaty is that it has provisions that allow for the addition of new chemicals into the convention itself. And I'll be talking more about the process by which these chemicals can be added. We'll go to the next slide, please. This just talks about some of the very important language of the convention. And I should say that we have been involved in the negotiation of the convention, which began in 1998. And we worked to ensure some of this language in the preamble and in the text of the convention itself. These are chemicals that cause global harm to the environment and to human health. And it's very important that we were able to get precautionary language in the convention underlying the concerns of all the parties, and this is included within the convention. It's designed really to protect human health and the environment, and perhaps one of the most important things for us living in the North is that this convention in the preamble acknowledges that Arctic ecosystems and indigenous communities are particularly at risk. And this is really because of the phenomenon that I spoke of earlier, the grasshopper effect that tends to carry these chemicals into the Arctic where they accumulate. In the lower right-hand corner of this slide, you see a statue that was presented to the convention at the very beginning by Shilawat Cloutier of the Inuit Circumpolar Conference. This is an Inuit mother and child, and this statue stands at the fore of the convention every time it meets, every 2 years, to really remind the delegates about why they're there, about the fact that these chemicals can be carried from the mother and transmitted to her child without her consent. And this is to remind the delegates that they're there to protect the health of the most vulnerable people on the planet. Next slide just covers some of the milestones of the convention. The convention was initiated really because of the fact that scientists were studying these chemicals and looking at chemicals in breast milk of women in southern Quebec primarily, and they decided to include women of the far north to look. They just thought they would find, you know, background levels of these chemicals. And everyone was really shocked to find out that the Inuit women of the far north of Canada had some of the highest levels of these chemicals in their breast milk of any population on Earth. And this is what motivated the coming together of all of the nations of the world, the global community, to address this problem, because something was fundamentally wrong if women in the far north, far from the production and manufacture of these chemicals, were having these extraordinarily high levels of chemicals in their breast milk. The treaty was signed in 2001 when 92 countries signed the agreement. It entered into force in 2004 when the first 50 countries had ratified the treaty. In 2009, 9 new chemicals were added to the convention in addition to the initial Dirty Dozen. And in 2011, endosulfan, a pesticide that is used ubiquitously throughout the world, was included for global elimination. And in 2013, as Diana mentioned also, a flame retardant chemical, again, used throughout the world and found in the global environment, including the Arctic, was also added for global elimination. And there are currently 179 parties to the convention, as I mentioned earlier, and not including the U.S. The next slide. The next couple of slides, I'm just going to talk about the process for adding new chemicals because, as I mentioned, one of the real strengths of this convention is the legally binding provisions that allow for the addition of new chemicals that affect the global environment with a lens of really addressing the chemicals that are subject to long-range transport, that tend to bioaccumulate, that have adverse effects and that are persistent in the environment. This slide shows the deliberations of the scientific review committee that determines whether a persistent organic pollutant gets to be included under the provisions of the convention. And this scientific body includes scientists from all over the world. It's currently chaired by the woman sitting in the top left, Estefania Moreira from Brazil. And these deliberations happen annually, and the meetings are generally either in Geneva or in Rome. And we've been actively participating in these deliberations, presenting scientific evidence that show the effects of these chemicals in the Arctic. Next slide, please. This slide simply shows the rather deliberative process by which a chemical gets listed in the convention. And there are really three stages of review for a chemical. A chemical is first nominated by a particular country or a party to the convention. Then once a chemical is nominated, it goes to the scientific review committee called the POPS Review Committee for very rigorous review. And in the first stage, which is Annex D, this is the screening stage, a chemical is screened for different scientific criteria having to do with persistence, bioaccumulation, long-range transport, and adverse effects. The next stage of the review, if a chemical meets the screening criteria, it goes to the next stage, which is Annex E, the risk profile stage. And this is the stage where a chemical is really assessed for all of its POPS properties in great detail. And this is where the precautionary principle comes in, because there's language in the convention that states that lack of full scientific certainty shall not prevent the proposal from proceeding. So this is a very important language in the convention. The next stage and final stage of the review is Annex F, the risk management evaluation stage, where the scientists must consider socioeconomic considerations and also the alternatives to that chemical that include both chemical and non-chemical alternatives. If a chemical proceeds through all three of these stages, then the POPS Review Committee will recommend to the full COP or Conference of Parties to consider the listing, and it will go before that Conference of Parties for the decision. And the Conference of Parties meets every other year in odd years. So 2015 was the most recent meeting of the Conference of Parties. So at this most recent meeting of the Stockholm Convention Conference of Parties, there were three chemicals that had been recommended by the POPS Review Committee for listing under the convention: chlorinated naphthalenes, hexachlorobutadiene, and pentachlorophenol. And you'll see some of the characteristics of these three chemicals. Chlorinated naphthalenes are essentially no longer intentionally produced, but they had been used for many purposes, including wood preservation, additives to various paints and engine oils, capacitors, cable insulation. They are unintentionally produced in industrial combustion processes and other industrial processes, manufacturing. Hexachlorobutadiene is also mainly a byproduct of chlorinated solvent manufacturing, and no current intentional uses are known. Also had many historical uses as a solvent, transformer fluid, and also an insecticide. Pentachlorophenol I'll be talking a lot more about, because it was, of the three, it was the most controversial of the substances that had been recommended by the POPS Review Committee. It also had many historical uses as an insecticide, biocide, fungicide. You see all the listed uses here. The primary use currently is as a wood preservative. It's a pesticide, and it's used to treat utility poles and cross arms. And the primary uses are in Canada and the U.S. Most countries have already phased this chemical out. Next slide. Going into the Conference of Parties, the POPS Review Committee had made certain recommendations about these three chemicals. For chlorinated naphthalenes, they recommended the listing of these chemicals in Annex A. Annex A is the annex of the convention that calls for global elimination. And so the POP ROC essentially proposed listing of all these different types of chlorinated naphthalenes in Annex A with no exemptions, and also in Annex C, And Annex C is the convention annex that addresses unintentional production, which is really important because chlorinated naphthalenes are really no longer intentionally produced. So the international network that we're a part of, I'll talk a little bit more about later, the International POPs Elimination Network, supported this recommendation of the POPs Review Committee. Hexachlorobutadiene, again, the POPs Review Committee proposed listing in Annex A for global elimination, and they noted a listing without exemptions would be the most efficient control measure, but they also recommended listing in Annex C to address unintentional production. And again, the International POPs Elimination Network supported this recommendation of the Scientific Review Committee. Pentachlorophenol, the POPs Review Committee again proposed listing under Annex A with a possible allowance for a time-limited exemption of 5 years to give time for the phase-out of the use of this chemical. And this would be specifically and only for the use for utility pole treatment. The International POPs Elimination Network supported this recommendation for listing in Annex A, but we also advocated for no exemptions, noting that this chemical is a global contaminant, that many countries have phased it out, and that the time for the phase out should be immediate. Going on to the next slide, and just to review kind of quickly some of the adverse effects of chlorinated naphthalenes and hexachlorobutadiene. Chlorinated naphthalenes are highly toxic. They're similar in their toxicity to dioxins, and they are similar in structure to polychlorinated biphenyls. They have endocrine effects at very low concentrations, and one of the characteristics as a persistent organic pollutant is that they are subject to long-range transport. They are showing up in the Arctic, and they tend to bioaccumulate in fish and wildlife. Hexachlorobutadiene is carcinogenic. It's also a kidney toxic, and it targets the kidney. In some occupational studies, it causes chromosomal damage to the workers. It's also found in Arctic air and wildlife, and it's very highly toxic to fish. I'm going to move on to the next slide, pentachlorophenol. I mentioned that this is a pesticide, and it's primary uses, now probably about 85% of the world use, is in the U.S. and Canada for treatment of utility poles. This chemical is a very old and nasty chemical, similar to ones like DDT that have been phased out. It was introduced in 1936 by Dow and Monsanto. The only current manufacturer of this chemical is in Matamoros, Mexico, KMG Chemicals, just south of the border, south of Texas, and it's manufactured there, and it's also then carried across the border and formulated in a KMG facility in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. I mentioned it's banned in many countries because of its high toxicity and its harm to health. This chemical was nominated to the convention by the European Commission in 2011. It's been through all of the stages of review, and the POPs Review Committee determined, and I think this language is important, that pentachlorophenol, its salts and esters, are likely, as a result of their long-range transport, to lead to significant adverse human health and environmental effects, such that global action is warranted. So this was the recommendation that the POPs Review Committee made to the Conference of Parties that really led to the decision that was made at the most recent Conference of Parties. The next slide talks about some of the scientific findings that were included in the documents prepared by the Scientific Review Committee. Pentachlorophenol is a ubiquitous global contaminant. It's found in air, water, and soil, as well as human tissues and people throughout the world. It's one of the most dominant organic, persistent organic contaminants in Arctic countries such as Norway. And elevated levels of pentachlorophenol are found in humans throughout the Arctic. It's, again, very dominant in Inuit people as a contaminant in human tissues, and it's in some cases superseded certain types of PCBs as the chlorinated compound of highest concern. It's found in the indigenous Chukotka people of the Russian Arctic, and you can see the levels that were measured there. So this chemical is elevated in the blood of people throughout the Arctic, and that's one of the primary concerns that I think drove the decision to phase this chemical out. The next slide just covers some of the known health effects. Again, these are discussed exhaustively in the documents that the POPS Review Committee forwarded to the Conference of the Parties. It's known to be associated with reproductive and developmental toxicities and all of these other effects. It interferes especially with thyroid and reproductive hormones. It's also a known carcinogen. I think one of the most serious health effects is that, of course, children are particularly vulnerable. It's known to cause neurodevelopmental and cognitive effects in children that are exposed prenatally. And if these children are followed and given intelligence and cognitive tests into their childhood and early adulthood, it causes serious neurodevelopmental problems, including behavioral problems, attention and learning deficits. And this is really associated with the fact that it targets the thyroid, which then affects the neurodevelopment of these children. One of the studies that I cite here, this is kind of rare, I think, for a scientific paper, but the scientists in one of the papers that looked at these neurodevelopmental effects in children stated that unrelenting efforts should be made to find safe alternatives for these compounds. The National Toxicology Program reclassified pentachlorophenol in its 2014 report as reasonably anticipated to be a human carcinogen. It's especially associated with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma has been elevated especially among workers who work with this chemical. And dioxins and furans are also inevitably produced as byproducts during its manufacturing and also its use. Move to the next slide. This slide just depicts a pentachlorophenol-treated utility pole that I found in our neighborhood just a few blocks from where we work. This is located just adjacent to an elementary school. And I think this just highlights the problem with this chemical, that it's used to treat utility poles that are in neighborhoods, that are next to schools. These poles can be significant sources of dioxins and furans. The pentachlorophenol and dioxins and furans contaminate soils and groundwater. A very recent case study of pentachlorophenol-treated poles that were installed in Long Island, New York, found levels up to 250,000 micrograms per kilogram. These are exceedingly high levels, 300 times the levels that are allowed for cleanup in the state of New York. Recent studies have shown that children are not protected by the current regulatory framework that we have in the U.S. and Canada, and that children can have high exposures to these chemicals. And then, of course, once these utility poles meet their end of life, they have to be treated as hazardous waste. And unfortunately, they are often not treated as hazardous waste, and people can use them in gardens, in fencing, in even in home construction. So this is a problem because these utility poles are not required to be labeled. The next slide reviews some of the safe non-chemical alternatives that are readily available and economically viable. These include alternative materials. We really don't there are other chemical treatments that can be used for wood treatment, but we really advocate for material substitutions here, including naturally resistant hardwoods, concrete, steel, and fiberglass composites, undergrounding the lines as the best alternatives to the use of pentachlorophenol-treated poles. And these have a much longer life than do pentachlorophenol-treated poles. They require less maintenance as well. So we think that these are far more preferable to using such a toxic and persistent chemical to treat utility poles. And this, the next slide simply shows the participation of the chemical industry, that represents the wood preservative manufacturers, just to give you an idea of who these people are. I think one of the things I wanted to highlight here is the woman pictured here, Kristen Hendricks, worked for the US EPA up until at least 2013, and then 2014, she was representing the chemical industry at the POPS Review Committee and essentially advocating for continued use of this chemical. So it was kind of the revolving door problem. And I'm going to turn it over to my dear colleague, Vi.
Good morning. My name is Vi Wari. I'm the daughter of the late John and Della Wari. I'm a St. Lawrence Island Yupik mother and grandmother. And this is a photo of our Global Indigenous Peoples Caucus that attended the Conference of the Parties 7. The top picture is of myself giving an intervention of why penta should be globally banned. The picture on the bottom left is of our youth that was delivering a similar intervention in Conference of the Party 6. And the bottom right picture is of myself. We had a campaign where we served, when we were working to ban endosulfan, we were serving all organic and non items in a cafe to all the delegates. The Global Indigenous Peoples Caucus represented the intervention that I gave. As I mentioned, we collected resolutions and letters that were given to the delegates of the Stockholm Convention from the Assembly of First Nations, Treaty 6 First Nations, Kuriyang Tribal Council out of Dillingham, Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, Native Village of Diomede, Native Village of Elam, Native Village of Gamble, Native Village of Mercoyoc, and Native Village of Wales, and the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. And I'd like to say a quote from Rochelle Driver recently in a press release. The resolutions and letters we received that called on the U.S. and Canada to support the global ban of pentachlorophenol were key factors in achieving this victory. The U.S. and Canada are the two largest users of pentachlorophenol, and they changed their original positions and did not oppose the listing of this toxic chemical for a global ban as a direct result of our Indigenous people's active engagement leading up to and during the Conference of the Parties. And I will now read the intervention that was given to the delegates. There was, as Pam mentioned, delegates from 179 countries. There was approximately 1,200 delegates, non-governmental organizations or NGOs and observers. And this is addressed toward the president of the Stockholm Convention. And this is the one that I delivered. My name is Vi Wari. I'm a tribal member of the Native Village of Sivunga in the Arctic. I am making this intervention on behalf of Alaska Community Action on Toxics, International Indian Treaty Council, and the Global Indigenous Peoples Caucus. Indigenous peoples continue to bear a burden we did not create because POPs reach us from global sources and we do not have the capacity to deal with this on our own. In the Arctic, the levels of POPs contamination in breast milk are amongst the highest of any population on Earth. Indigenous children all over the world are harmed by POPs from conception and throughout their lives. The preamble of the Stockholm Convention highlights a special vulnerability of Arctic Indigenous communities. We know that PCP is found in our traditional foods, It can affect our learning and development. It is passed from mother to child through breast milk. We suffer many health disparities, including high rates of cancers and birth defects. And our hunters are now in small open boats along the Arctic sea ice. The bowhead whale gives its life so that we have the food that enriches our bodies and spirits. If we cannot hunt, our culture will die and we will lose our identity. Our traditional foods have high levels of persistent chemicals, such as pentachlorophenol. This is a terrible injustice and violation of our human rights. We respectfully offer that these issues have severe and lasting impacts now. The principle of free, prior, and informed consent is important for Indigenous peoples, not only under the conventions, but also under other international mechanisms, including the United Nations Declarations on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. For the health and well-being of our Indigenous peoples and all peoples of the earth and our future generations, please support the initiative to list PCB in Annex A with no exemption, and HC, BD, and CNs in Annexes A and C. And thank you. Next slide, please. This work is so important because these toxic chemicals that arrive in the Arctic has resulted in our people being some of the most highly contaminated population on the planet. As Pam mentioned, even though we don't have chemical plants or manufacturers on our lands, they arrive through air and ocean currents. They're ending up in the Arctic, in our traditional foods, our lands and waters, and harming the health and well-being of our people. And some of the human rights implications include that everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and of his family, including food, which is from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Three other violations include from the Article 1 in Common International Covenants on Civil and Political Rights and on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights states, in no case may a people be deprived of its own means of subsistence. Article 29 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples states that states shall take effective measures to ensure that no storage or disposal of hazardous materials shall take place in the lands or territories of Indigenous peoples without their free, prior, and informed consent. And lastly, Article 22 of Disabilities in the implementation of this declaration. Article 22 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Particular attention shall be paid to the rights and special needs of Indigenous elders, women, youth, children, and persons with disabilities. Next slide shows slides of most of us in Alaska. Alaska has 229 tribes. Our people have lived a traditional way of life, living off our lands and oceans for many, many generations. And subsistence foods and our way of life is very central in our cultures. As you can see in these photos, the lady on the top right is skinning a walrus hide, which is used to as a cover for angyak. And there are photos here of our men harvesting bowhead whales, walrus, and seals, a way of life that is very spiritually and sacred to our way of life. As Pam mentioned, these global contaminants arrive in the Arctic and ending up in our traditional foods. the levels that we're finding in the bowhead whale, walrus and seals, blubber and rendered oil are at levels we should not be eating them for excess cancer risk. So this is a violation of our way of life. It's harming the health and well-being of Alaska and Arctic people without our consent. And so this is a very big human rights violation. Next slide. This is a photo of the indigenous delegation to the Stockholm Convention, Conference of the Parties in Geneva. And we are holding up a banner to remind the delegates as they were entering the convention center to please protect the health of our future generations, because these chemicals, as Pam mentioned, know no boundaries. They're affecting the health and well-being of our children. Our children are our most vulnerable. We need support from other tribes and from Alaska and the Arctic Indigenous peoples. This work is so important because it is affecting our health. It's affecting our ability to continue our way of life. One of the health harms that we're seeing on St. Lawrence Island, because these chemicals affect our learning and and also harm the development of babies. Our children in Sivunga have the lowest test scores in the Bering Strait School District. Alaska has 2 times more birth defects than the lower 48. And our Alaska Native infants in the state of Alaska, we have 2 times more than the non-natives in our state of Alaska. So it's very important that we step forward. It is our civic duty to be involved in the Stockholm Convention, not as people globally, but so important for tribes and people of the Arctic and Alaska to be involved. We need your help, whether it's passing resolutions or other letters that were presented at this conference of the parties. And you can contact us on how you might be able to get involved more so that we can protect our future generations. Next slide. And Pam will take over from here on.
Thank you, Vi. This slide talks a little bit about a network that Alaska Community Action on Toxics is a participating organization of, the International POPs Elimination Network. And in addition to the really significant role played by the Indigenous Peoples Caucus, the International POPs Elimination Network is also very significant in the Stockholm Convention. It's a network of over 700 non-governmental, environmental, health, and justice organizations from 100 countries, including Africa, Asia, and the Pacific, Europe and Eastern Europe, Central and South America, as well as North America. People from this network present very powerful interventions, offering intelligent insights, and in combination, I think the Indigenous Peoples Global Caucus and the International POPs Elimination Network are the conscience of the convention, because these issues of health and justice are very real and not abstract. And we're there to remind the delegates not only of the science about these chemicals, but also the very real impacts that these chemicals have on people's lives. The mission of IPEN is to achieve a toxics-free future for all. And again, it's a very powerful network. I'm always impressed and very honored to be a part of it. Next slide simply shows the leadership. The co-chairs include Manny Colanzo and Olga Sperenskaya. Olga Sperenskaya is a Goldman Prize winner. And below you see the representation of the steering committee of the International POPs Elimination Network. Next slide. I would urge you to visit the IPEN website, and there are a lot of different resources there, including this Global Network for a Toxics-Free Future, which gives the three-year report from 2011 through 2013 of the accomplishments of the International POPs Elimination Network. But you can also find some really interesting publications, and I'm going to highlight one of them, An Introduction to Endocrine Disrupting Chemicals. And this was just published in December 2014. We had a call about it a couple of months ago with IPEN and the Endocrine Society. So a lot of great resources there, and I urge you to take a look at those. So just in conclusion and in summary, these were the major decisions at the Stockholm Convention in 2015. HCBD was included in Annex A of the convention. Again, this is the annex that allows for global elimination of this chemical with no exemptions. And the Conference of the Parties recommended further evaluation by the POPs Review Committee to concern the unintentional production, so it was not included in Annex C of the convention at this time. CNs, or chlorinated naphthalenes, were also listed in Annex A, and they were also listed in Annex C to address the unintentional production. And there was a time-limited exemption that had been requested by the Russian Federation because CNs are an intermediate in the manufacturing of another substance, polyfluorinated naphthalenes. And then, remarkably, pentachlorophenol was listed in Annex A with a very time-limited exemption only for utility pole treatment for 5 years. So this chemical is now in the process of being globally phased out. It was very controversial. There were two countries that were blocking the progress of this chemical being included under the convention, India and Nepal. But in the end, Switzerland made a very brave move to ask the Conference of Parties to vote. And the Conference of Parties voted to vote on the chemical, and then ultimately the convention voted to phase out this chemical and include it in Annex A of the convention. The three meetings of the Stockholm, Rotterdam, and Basel conventions were very complex, over 50 decisions. These are summarized in a document that we'll have posted on our website, published by Earth Negotiations Bulletin, and you can read about all of the decisions that were made under the three conventions. And then finally, I just list some resources here that you might want to refer to after the call. So I think we'll end there and just welcome any questions. Thank you very much.
Before you begin with the next phase, I'm wondering if Tiffany Emingen or Erica Apatiki have joined us, and if they would like to add anything to this discussion. They were parties of the Global Indigenous Peoples Caucus, and Tiffany Emingen is a youth from Savonga, and Erica Apatiki is from Gamble. I don't know if they're on the call and if they'd like to add any thoughts.
So, Tiffany and Erica, if either of you are on the call, you would need to press star 2 to unmute your line. Well,
this is Erica.
Oh, great.
I think everything has been pretty much covered.
Okay. Is Tiffany on the line?
I don't have anything to say.
Okay. So thank you for your presentations, Vi and Pam. And now we'd like to invite questions and comments from our participants. So if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 2. To unmute your line. It's also helpful if you state your name and affiliation so we know who you are and where you're calling from. And we ask that you try to be brief just so that we can get to a few questions in the next 10 minutes.
Hello, this is Kathy Blaustein in Corvallis, Oregon at Oregon State University. I'd like to thank both of the presenters today. I learned a tremendous amount about something that I actually thought I knew quite a bit about, but I guess I didn't know anywhere near what I needed to. So thank you both. But my question today is for whoever would like to take a shot at it. I think it was the Rotterdam and the Stockholm Convention were described by Pam as being legally binding. And I just wondered what that term meant. Does that mean that there's some sort of a monitoring or enforcement component to the convention, or is it all up to the state to try to monitor what's going on within, or the parties within their boundaries? If you could let me, if any of you have any information about that, and I will mute my line again. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for your question. Yes, I'm most familiar with the mechanisms within the Stockholm Convention, but both have compliance and regulatory mechanisms to enforce the provisions of the treaty. And the compliance mechanisms in the Stockholm Convention also require that each country submit a national implementation plan to demonstrate to the full conference of the parties the progress that each country makes in the implementation of the convention. So compliance and enforcement were very big topics of discussion at the conventions, and so it's a very complex process, but yes.
Thank you. Are there other people who would like to ask a question or make a comment and join in the discussion? Please just press star 2 to unmute your line. No one is stepping up just yet. Maybe while they decide whether they're...
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Doris Solarius in Arizona, and I have been very aware of the problems with pentachlorophenol in particular, and I would really like to do everything I can personally to get it banned in the United States. And so I wonder, what is the most important thing I can do locally in the United States? Do we have some actions we can take?
Yes, thank you so much for your question, Doris. This is Pam, and you're absolutely right. The U.S., because our country is not a party to the convention, is not legally obligated to observe the provisions of the convention at this time until the Senate ratifies the convention. And right now, EPA allows the continued use of pentachlorophenol for the manufacturing and treatment, the manufacturing, which takes place in Mexico, and then treatment of utility poles and crossarms with this highly toxic and persistent chemical. EPA is currently undergoing a review of this chemical under the federal pesticide law called CIFRA, requires that each pesticide be reviewed on a periodic basis. And so we're just entering phase of review that EPA is undertaking right now. So I think the most important thing is to convey your concerns about the chemical directly to the regional offices of EPA and to the administrator, Gina McCarthy. Prior to the Conference of the Parties, we had a sign-on letter, hundreds of organizations, not only in the U.S., but also Canada and Mexico, sent letters to their respective governments. Our letter went to Secretary of State John Kerry and also the administrator of EPA, Gina McCarthy, urging the rapid phase out of this chemical and for the U.S. to really respect the decision of the global community. So I think we really just need to put pressure on EPA. I think this is a chemical whose time has ended, and we simply have to, I think, emphasize the urgency of this. The science is very strong about this chemical and why it should be phased out.
Well, you gave us very good documentation that I'm with Sierra Club and we work on all these toxic issues. But I think that we need to do some specific things like this, especially, you know, when it's such an environmental justice issue. We probably can't do anything about the fact that the United States does not ratify treaties. They're terrible. but we can do what we can, as you suggested. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome, and you raised some really good points. One other thing I should mention that's happening, because of the very serious situation in Long Island where recently installed poles are leaching pentachlorophenol, dioxins, and furans into the soil and groundwater, a number of citizens in New York have convinced their legislators to introduce legislation at the state level that would ban pentachlorophenol. So this is, again, something that we can do in our local states to try to push a decision on the national level. And so this legislation has been introduced in New York, and I think it's very promising. One other thing I wanted to mention, that in addition to the recent decision by the U.S. National Toxicology Program to reclassify PCP as a human carcinogen, a 2014 paper that was published in the journal Lancet found PCP among the industrial chemicals that are known to cause brain injury and brain toxicity and neurological symptoms in both children and adults, and that this really proves that this substance does reach the brain and exerts toxicity to brain cells. So, you know, the science continues to come out on this, but I think the results of that are very clear, that this chemical needs to be phased out as immediately as possible.
Okay, thanks. I'll work on this with people in New York.
Great. And
other states should do this.
Yeah, I'd be happy to make connections there, Doris, and I've been in touch with those folks and really happy to link everyone up.
Well, maybe I'll send you my email and you could let me know. The Sierra Club has a new president who's very concerned about environmental justice, and I think he would support us. He would, be glad to know we're doing this.
Great, and I'm so glad to hear your voice, because I've been familiar with your work over many years and really appreciate all the great work that you've done.
Well, thank you. I try to stay in touch.
Vi, did you want to add something?
Yes, regarding the neurodevelopment effects, as I mentioned, it affects our children's learning disabilities. For tribes, this is a big concern, because if our children can't learn, we're not able to pass on our culture, our language, our songs and stories. And so this will affect our future generations. This work is so important. These multinational corporations are driven by profit. They do not take human health into account. The health disparities we're seeing on St. Lawrence Island, we have a cancer crisis right now. And as we speak, I have a sibling that's going back to my community of Savonga. He was here for 6 weeks of treatment, and he has to come back next month to have surgery, and afterward, every 3 weeks for chemo. Not only is my sibling affected today, I have a niece, an uncle, and two of my first cousins. So, there's an urgency here in this work. Help is not coming fast enough. We need tribes in Alaska, indigenous peoples and peoples of the Arctic to take action. You can contact us on how you can get involved. Not only are we hearing about cancers and neurodevelopment and disabilities on St. Lawrence Island, but all the communities that we've been to, we hear of cancer being the biggest concern, because these chemicals are linked to cause cancer.
Thank you, Vi. And I think that your call to action is probably a good place to end, since we are out of time. I will be sending a follow-up email with contact information and additional resources to help keep the momentum of this call going. In addition, the call has been recorded, and a recording will be made available later, probably later today or tomorrow. And I also wanted to make a final announcement, which is that next week, for those of you who are in Anchorage, it's ACAT's annual celebration of the life of Rachel Carson. It's a great event. You don't want to miss it if you're in Anchorage. And I'm going to give you a few details. You can also call the ACAT office at 907-222-7714. But the event is on Thursday, May 28th. From 6 to 9 p.m. at Kincaid Chalet, and there's all sorts of events, a nettle pasta bar, a wild edibles walk, mocktails, birthday cake, and live music. So please, if you're in Anchorage, join us for that wonderful annual event. And at this time, Pam, Guy, is there anything else you'd like to add before I close the call?
I think we covered it. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, thank you everyone for joining us today, and look for a follow-up email with more information about how to take action and also the recording. So thanks everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Diana.